I got up really early that dark winter's morning. It was about 4 a.m. when I left the house, and at first the day went really well. The taxi came when it should, and I arrived at the station with loads of time to spare to catch the train. The train was warm and it was comfortable, and I left on time. It was seamless. There was no problem, and I just love it when things go to plan. It was looking fantastic when we got to Perth. The train was still running to time, and you can't guarantee that with the trains. And I had no need to change to go onto the train for Glasgow, so I could just carry on sitting there reading my book. And I reckoned I would have no difficulty getting my connection out to Helensburgh for the meeting I was headed for. So when we left Perth, I was really relaxed, and my hopes were high about the day ahead of me. 5 minutes later, the train stopped. Now, that's not unusual. Often you need to wait for another train to pass, so I didn't think much of it and kept on reading. But 15 minutes later, we were still in the same place. No train had gone past us, and we weren't moving, so my antennae were really starting to twitch. Eventually, the conductor came over the tannoy. The news was not good. The line south was blocked with a broken train near Dunblane, and the engineers were coming out to get it moving before our journey could continue. How long would that take? No one knew. Well, if you've ever sat on a train in the middle of fields, 5 minutes away from a station that you've just left, you can imagine the kind of emotions that were running through my mind. Frustration, regret. Why didn't I go down last night? Why didn't I just get off in Perth and get a bus? I was actually starting to get really quite annoyed. I thought everything was planned out perfectly, but it wasn't going the way that I'd hoped and I'd planned. Life is just like that sometimes. Things that we hope for and we plan for and we spend a lot of time investing ourselves in do not go the way that we expect. I mean, today's reading finds Samuel facing the fact that the plan that he thought was good and he was following it just wasn't going to work out the way that he'd hoped. God had rejected Saul as king, but that rejection didn't stop Samuel actually getting into a state of mourning for Saul. Now, to understand a bit of Samuel's upset, I think we need to go kind of back into the story, a little bit further back into the book of Samuel, because the events there are actually set up the story for David, and we're going to be exploring him for the rest of the term. The three of them are actually Samuel, Saul, and David are incredibly important characters in the Bible. And to get an idea of the importance, I'll give you this. This, if we go by the number of times any specific name is mentioned in the Old Testament, David's name comes first. He's followed by Moses and then by Saul. Samuel, you can see, is also quite high up on that list. And you can see there the number of times each of these names appears in the Old Testament. Samuel was born towards the end of the time of the judges. And at that time, Israel was ruled by a coalition of the elders of the various tribes. Although Yahweh, God, was still sovereign for them, they didn't actually have a human king. They were God's covenant people and they were following him. And as a child, Samuel was handed over by his mother Hannah to become a Nazarite, to live in God's presence and to devote his life to God. He was a priest and he was a prophet and a judge. Samuel called the people of Israel to repent in their wrongs and to trust in God. It was a difficult time because the people of Israel were living in the land amongst the Canaanites, and the Canaanites worshipped different gods. And the land was also surrounded by other powerful nations. Again, these nations didn't follow God and were keen to conquer the people of Israel. The people of Israel had got involved with some of the Canaanites and adopted some of their worship practices, so it just wasn't an easy time. There's a whole load of really fascinating history that's being uncovered now by archaeologists about all the nations of that time, and it's something that's well worth going and reading about and finding out more about. Among all those nations, though, perhaps the most recognisable of all the names is that of the Philistines. Numerous battles with the Philistines flow through the pages of 1 and 2 Samuel. As a nation, it wasn't thought that they had huge numbers, but they were able to recruit fighters from Canaan to support them in their battle with the people of Israel. And the Philistines had a real skill. They were really skilled with metals. And that meant that they had produced for themselves weaponry and armour that was a far superior quality to that the people of Israel had access to. So that combination of great weapons and these extra fighters made them into an enemy really to be reckoned with, difficult to fight. Now Samuel led the nation very well, but as he got older, he had to appoint his sons as leaders. And quite frankly, his sons were not up to the job. The pressure from the Philistines continued, and the elders and the people became more and more worried about the way things were going. The nation was under threat, and they started looking at all these powerful nations around them and trying to work out, how do they make it work? What makes things work for them? It seemed to the people that what Israel really needed was a human king. Other nations had them, and they seemed to do quite well with them. They really wanted a king that would lead them out in battle, would be at the head of the army. Well, God recognised the people's request as a simple rejection of God by him, by the people. And God told Samuel, go and warn the people about the loss of freedoms and the other problems that you might just get with a human king, because he's going to want all the rights of kingship. But the people were really determined. A human king was what they thought they wanted and what they thought they needed. And so Saul, who came from the tribe of Benjamin, was appointed king by Samuel following God's command. As Israel's king, Saul was meant to uphold the covenant with God, and he was meant to embody it, and he was meant to serve the people. Now, at first, it all went fine. Saul was quite a good military leader, and he had some really daring exploits as king. However, he was very quick to act as he saw fit, and he refused to follow the instructions given to him by God through Samuel, and that led to God rejecting Saul as king. And it's this rejection that we come to in today's reading, and that's what Samuel is just so sad about. That plan that they'd been following with Saul as king is gone. Saul was still alive and he was still king of Israel, but he had been rejected by God. And as a result of that, Samuel had cut all his ties with Saul. He would no longer advise Saul, and Saul was left to be king on his own. The plan that Samuel had set in train with this human king for the nation was no longer the right one. God had found someone else to be a king, a man after his own heart. Saul had largely been chosen by the people, and he just was not the right one to lead. So it wasn't new news to Samuel that Saul had been rejected by God, but it seemed to be something that he was really having a difficult time letting go of. You know, that business of what might have been, and it can be quite a sad thing. We don't know, because the Bible doesn't tell us what amount of time had elapsed between the various events of Saul doing things that led to his rejection and God coming to this moment of David going to be anointed. Now, God didn't condemn Saul in any way with his mourning, but he's asking him to recognise that the time has come to move on. Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I'm now sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king. Perhaps you can empathise with Samuel. Maybe there are things in your life which haven't gone the way that you hoped. We can probably all think back about times when things haven't gone the way we would have liked them to have. There's lots of reasons why our plans go right off the rails. From a missed train connection to a project hitting a snag that we could never have foreseen. And sometimes the issues are far more serious. We don't get the exam grades we hope for, or there's illness in the family. At times like that, we find life taking a turn that we did not for a moment anticipate. Sometimes hindsight leads us to look back and be glad that our initial plan didn't work out. Perhaps things have come up better. Not that we would have ever known that when we were in the midst of that moment. And the impact of derailed plans really can't be minimised, because sometimes it does leave us feeling very adrift and wondering what if. If only things had been different. That level of distress, that sort of feeling is very hard to get past. Even adapting to what is, never mind moving into the something new, can be hard and it can be scary. God takes notice of Samuel's mourning. He's not annoyed with him, but it is time to move into the new. He has a king to anoint. God is leading him into something new. And God will do the same for us when the time is right for us to move. Moving on from a plan is not always easy. Samuel feared about what he was asked to do. Probably quite reasonably, he worried that Saul was going to kill him when he heard what was happening. But God had a plan to offer to him. You know, take a heifer and tell everyone that you're there to make a sacrifice. God would show him the way and tell him what to do when the time came. The family which Samuel is sent to in the town of Bethlehem are so significant. Their lineage can be traced right back to Abraham through the story of Ruth, Jesse's mother, who in the preceding book of the Bible is named, that book is named for her. If you look at the first page of the New Testament too, you will find all these names in the genealogy of Jesus. So although Samuel wouldn't have known at the time, there's a real significance in what God is asking him to do. And that's an interesting thought, because we don't always know the future significance of the things that we do and the importance that they will have way down the line. And that conversation we have with somebody, how it may impact into the future. As we read about Samuel's encounter with Jesse's family, we can see that Samuel quickly zooms in on Eliab, sure that he's looking at the Lord's anointed. It's so easy to make these assumptions about somebody by the way that they look, that superficial thing. Warrior kings should be tall and strong looking. That's maybe a human criteria. But it's not the one that God was wanting to look at himself. God told Samuel, the Lord does not look at the things that people look at. It's not what's on the outside that matters to God, but the heart. In a way, Samuel needed to change all his expectations. And it meant that Samuel had to listen to God, to hear what he was leading him to. None of the sons Jesse had brought with him to the sacrifice were chosen by God. God had chosen the one son that no one had expected, the youngest, the one that hadn't even been considered important enough to invite along. Still out in the field, still looking after the sheep. So often we read of God confounding human expectation, raising the humble, choosing the one that people might reject. God does not look at the things that people are looking at. He looks at the heart. And David, God had noticed, was a man after his own heart. David was someone who would follow God and trust in him, whose relationship with God was strong. He may have been the youngest of that family, but he was not insignificant, especially not to God. He was anointed by Samuel, and from that day on we are told that the Spirit of the Lord came strongly upon him. Now David is a really important king. He's very different to Saul, who came before, who was the people's choice. David is God's choice of a king for the people of Israel, a man after his own heart. And that reign is looked back on as a golden age for God's people. Later in David's life, God made him a promise, saying that your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. It's a really important promise or covenant, and we'll be exploring that in the weeks to come as we dig a bit deeper into David's story and we move towards Christmas to celebrate the birth of Jesus. David would go on to face times of trial and adversity. He was entirely human. But through his faith and his trust in God was central through all these difficulties. You know, he had his weaknesses, we all do. But even in the very worst of times, realizing his failure, he would go to God and he would admit his sins and beg forgiveness. We've got a whole load of Psalms that are credited to David, including Psalm 51, written at one of the deepest and darkest times in his life. And he asks God in that Psalm to have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions, wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from sin. Things don't always go the way we hope. We don't always behave the way that we should, but God has compassion to forgive us. Our past failures don't stop God from guiding us into the new, into new possibilities. Sometimes we get ourselves a bit mired in thinking about how things should be, and we try to judge with our human eyes, but we should trust in God and remember that he looks differently at things. God goes before us, and he's forging a new direction, a different path, a better way, if we can only discern his leading and trust him as Samuel did and as David did. We're going to sing again, I'm giving you my heart.